Imagine for a second that you're handed the keys to this this multi-million dollar artificially intelligent sports car. I mean, it can predict your health, it can sequence your DNA, and literally save your life.
Right.
But there is a major catch here. You are forced to drive this marvel of engineering on a rutted dirt road with absolutely no street signs.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Exactly. Welcome to the deep dive. You are here because you want to cut through the noise, skip the information overload, and just get straight to the aha moments.
And today, we are exploring this massive collision that's taking place right now in healthcare. Because on one side, you have these high-tech Silicon Valley promises of AI and, predictive wellness.
Oh, yeah.
But on the other side, you have the completely analog, fluorescent-lit reality of your local community pharmacy.
Right, the place you go when you have a cold. So to understand how this age-old profession of pharmacy is trying to survive and, well, genuinely thrive in the AI era, we're diving into the insights of Anita Weidman. She's the head of clinical pharmacy at the University of Innsbruck, and she's got over two decades of international experience restructuring healthcare in places like Aberdeen, Cambridge, Ottawa. We're looking at what it actually takes to achieve what she calls pharmaceutical care 2.0.
It is such a fascinating transition to look at because before we can even talk about the robots or the AI-assisted reviews or wearable tech, we actually have to go backward.
Okay.
Yeah, Weidman argues that to build the digital future of pharmacy, we first have to understand the foundational philosophy of the profession, and that really crystallized back in 1990.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the idea that handing out medicine requires a foundational philosophy is, frankly, a wild concept to me.
Yeah, it sounds a bit grand, right?
It does. I mean, historically, hasn't a pharmacist's job basically just been to count the pills the doctor ordered and put them in a bottle?
Well, see, that was exactly the crisis the profession was facing. Back in the late 80s and early 90s, pharmacy was suffering this massive identity crisis. Yeah. Two researchers, Hepler and Strand, recognized that the field had sort of devolved into what they famously called a collection of disputatious factions.
Wow, disputatious factions.
Right, basically people arguing. They said they were unable to choose from a bewildering variety of functions because pharmacists had all this immense clinical knowledge about chemistry and biology, but they were arguing with themselves about what their actual job was.
So they were highly educated, but they lacked like a unified purpose.
Precisely.
Yeah.
That was the problem. So in 1990, Hepler and Strand basically drew a line in the sand. They declared that pharmaceutical care could not just be a transactional exchange of goods.
Okay.
They redefined it as the responsible provision of drug therapy. And that word, responsible, is doing a lot of heavy lifting there.
How so? Like responsible in terms of making sure they just don't give you the wrong dose.
Oh, much deeper than that. They outlined four specific human outcomes that the pharmacist is actively responsible for achieving.
Oh, wow. Okay, what are they?
So, one, the actual cure of a disease. Two, the elimination or alleviation of a patient's symptoms.
Whoa.
Three, the halting or slowing of a disease process. Or four, the prevention of a disease entirely.
Notice that none of those outcomes are dispensed a pill accurately.
Exactly. It shifted the entire focus from the physical drug to the biological and human outcome of the patient.
See, I've always kind of viewed the old school idea of a pharmacist as like a highly educated vending
A
machine.
vending machine, yeah.
You hand over the slip of paper, they decode the doctor's terrible handwriting, and you get the drug. Isn't demanding that they take responsibility for curing the disease a bit heavy for someone just handing over a blister pack of antibiotics?
What's fascinating here is that this framework explicitly defines this responsibility as a moral bond. It's not just a clinical job description, it's an ethical standard.
A moral bond.
Yeah, Weidman highlights that clinical skills alone are completely insufficient without an organizational structure and a true philosophy of practice. And this is what led to the framework known as the five C's.
Right, the five C's. Competence, commitment, covenant, cooperation, and context. Lay out how these actually work in practice, because honestly, they sound a bit abstract.
Yeah, let's break them down mechanistically. Competence is simply the baseline. You must have the clinical knowledge to identify if, say, a drug will interact badly with another drug.
Makes sense.
But competence alone just makes you a smart observer. And that brings us to commitment. This is the moral willingness to accept that this specific patient's health outcomes are your direct responsibility as a pharmacist.
Wait, so the pharmacist is taking ownership of the outcome, not just deferring to the physician who wrote the prescription?
That is the radical shift.
Yeah.
If a doctor prescribes something harmful or even just ineffective, the pharmacist is morally obligated to intervene.
Oh, wow.
Which leads directly into the third C, which is covenant. This is a mutually beneficial exchange. The patient grants authority to the pharmacist, and that authority is built entirely on trust.
And cooperation. I imagine that's the pharmacist and the doctor actually talking to each other instead of, you know, operating in silos.
Working as professional equals, yeah. It's not a hierarchy where the doctor dictates and the pharmacist just obeys. It's a true partnership. And finally, context. This is perhaps the most crucial one today. Context means understanding the patient's full, messy reality.
Like their home life.
Exactly. Their psychological, sociological, economic, and environmental situation.
So it's not just, here's your insulin, inject it twice a day. It's understanding the context, like, does this patient actually have a working refrigerator at home to store this insulin safely?
Right.
Or can they even afford the copay this month?
Exactly. All of those social determinants dictate how effective that drug therapy will actually be. If you ignore the context, the medicine fails. That is why it's a moral bond.
But I mean, let's be real here. That 1990 philosophy is beautiful on paper. But in the real world, pharmacies are chaotic. Phones are ringing constantly. Lines are backing up. Insurance claims are being denied.
Oh, absolutely.
Does this 5Cs philosophy actually function in the real world?
Well, if you want to see this philosophy working in reality, you have to look at what Scotland did.
Scotland.
Yeah. Weidman's research highlights the Scottish model as teaching the world about structural ambition. They didn't just write papers about the 5Cs. They literally built their entire national healthcare architecture around them.
How did they actually pull that off? Because changing a massive healthcare system is like trying to turn a battleship in a bathtub.
It is. So they made a structural physical change. Scotland took pharmacy teams and integrated them directly into general practitioner clinics.
Wait, really?
Yeah, they didn't leave them isolated in retail shops down the street. They embedded them into the core primary care team.
Physically putting the pharmacist right next to the doctor. Well, that forces cooperation, the fourth C right there.
It does. And it allowed them to tackle one of the most dangerous issues in modern healthcare, which is polypharmacy. For our listeners, polypharmacy isn't just taking two pills a day. It's when a single patient is taking 5, 8, sometimes 12 different medications at once.
Which usually happens because, like, the cardiologist prescribes one thing, the rheumatologist prescribes another, the GP adds something for sleep.
Right.
And suddenly, the patient's stomach is basically a chemical cocktail party.
A highly dangerous one. So Scotland built these world-leading frameworks to conduct robust medication reviews, specifically designed to make medicine safe and sustainable, looking ahead to the late 2020s.
How does that look in practice?
The embedded pharmacist sits down, looks at the whole board, and start safely deprescribing. They take the patient off the drugs that are interacting poorly or are just no longer needed.
And then the ultimate kind of unexpected proof of concept for this entire model happens, which is the global pandemic.
Oh, yeah. Think about the mechanics of 2020. Hospitals were locked down. GP clinics moved entirely to telehealth. The entire healthcare apparatus essentially retreated behind a screen.
Right. And I want you listening right now to picture your local pharmacy during those early days of 2020. They were the absolute front line.
The only ones.
The doors were unlocked. They were the only physical healthcare professionals you could actually walk up and talk to. There's this striking statement from the International Pharmaceutical Federation in 2022. It says the pandemic did not create pharmacy's value. It revealed it.
Such a powerful quote.
It achieved what decades of advocacy couldn't in changing the public conversation.
It completely proved the concept of the covenant. The trust was there. But, you know, as we move past the pandemic, we face a critical tension.
Which brings up my biggest question. Did that moment actually change the structural value of the pharmacist in the eyes of the healthcare system? Or were they just the only accessible professionals left with their doors open?
Yeah.
Because being accessible in a crisis isn't the same thing as being structurally funded for clinical excellence.
That is the exact problem we are facing. The public realized pharmacists are essential care providers, but the economic and structural systems haven't fully caught up to that revelation. And this tension is about to snap because a massive wave of new technology is crashing into the profession.
Here's where it gets really interesting. If the pandemic proved the undeniable value of deep, human-centric, analog pharmacy, Why is there this sudden aggressive rush to disrupt it with AI?
Because the digital tools being developed right now are extraordinarily powerful.
Mm-hmm.
We are looking at a digital promise timeline stretching from 2007 to 2025 and beyond.
What kind of tools?
Well, it starts with AI-assisted clinical screening that can instantly spot subtle anomalies in a patient's profile that a human who is moving quickly might easily miss.
Right, and we're talking about pharmacogenomic integration too. How does that actually work at the pharmacy counter?
So pharmacogenomics is using a patient's unique DNA profile to tailor their drug therapy.
Okay.
Instead of guessing which antidepressant or statin will work based on, like, population averages, a simple swab tells the pharmacist, hey, this patient's liver metabolizes this specific enzyme too quickly, so this drug will fail. Use the alternative. It removes all the trial and error.
Wow. Then you add real-time monitoring through wearable devices. I mean, imagine your pharmacist receiving an alert that your blood pressure is spiking dangerously over a weekend before you even feel the symptoms. They can proactively intervene.
It's incredible. And perhaps the most impactful tool is natural language processing, or NLP.
Wait, how does NLP change things for a pharmacist? Isn't that just like chatbot technology?
No, think about how chaotic a patient's medical history usually is. You have messy, unstructured, sometimes handwritten notes from three different specialists, lab results from a hospital, and prescription history from two different pharmacies.
It's a nightmare.
Exactly. NLP can instantly read, understand, and synthesize that entire chaotic history into one clear chronological narrative. It does the heavy lifting of gathering the data so the pharmacist can actually just analyze it.
I mean, it sounds like a perfect friction-free utopia. But going back to that analogy we started with, we are handing pharmacists the keys to a self-driving sports car, but they are stuck on a dirt road.
Right. And that is what Weidman calls the paradox of policy velocity.
Mm-hmm.
It's the fear that our technological policies are moving much faster than our foundational realities can actually support.
Yeah.
Are we pushing glossy digital services labeled as innovation without fostering the deep, patient-centered relationships that are the actual core of clinical care?
Because of the ground-level reality is incredibly stark. If you ask a room full of community pharmacists today, how many of them actually have reliable, real-time access to a patient's exact diagnosis, their recent lab results, and their complete medication history from every doctor?
The answer is almost none. Many are operating in a complete data vacuum.
They are flying blind. You cannot have AI-assisted DNA tailoring if the pharmacist can't even see the basic blood work that shows why the patient was prescribed the drug in the first place.
Exactly. The infrastructure simply isn't there in most places to support the technology. So how do we apply these powerful digital tools without losing the soul of the profession and without tripping over the analog reality?
We have to map the technology directly back to the 1990 philosophy, right? We basically upgrade the 5 C's for the digital era.
Let's run through how that works. So, competence is no longer just relying on human memory to cross-check thousands of drug interactions. It becomes AI-assisted screening and automated dispensing.
The machine handles the repetitive checks.
Right. And commitment is aided by remote monitoring. You are tethered to your patient's well-being digitally, receiving alerts when they are at risk. Then covenant, that crucial bond of trust, is maintained and expanded through secure, patient-facing apps and portals, keeping the lines of communication open.
And cooperation relies on truly shared electronic health records, just breaking down the walls so the GP and the pharmacist are looking at the exact same screen in real time.
Yes. And finally, context understanding their whole life situation is mapped to population health analytics.
Oh, that's smart.
AI can show a pharmacist the broader socioeconomic trends affecting their specific community, allowing for proactive, tailored care. The ultimate hope here is a beautiful, seamless division of labor. Let the machine do the checking. Let the pharmacist do the caring.
Machines process data and flag anomalies, and pharmacists relate to the human and take action. I mean, that sounds ideal. But I have to push back on this.
Okay.
Because we are talking about technology inside a business. If an economic model only pays a pharmacy when a physical product, a pill, leaves the shop, aren't these AI efficiency tools just going to be weaponized?
Weaponized how? What do you mean?
Well, if an AI tool makes a pharmacist 50% faster at checking prescriptions, the corporate ownership isn't going to say, great, now spend 50% more time talking to your patients.
Right. Yeah.
They're going to expect the pharmacist to fill 50% more prescriptions per hour. It's just going to turn them into faster factory workers pushing more product rather than actually improving patient care.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you have just highlighted the fatal flaw of integrating next-generation tech into an outdated business model. AI won't fix a broken economic incentive. It will only accelerate it.
Yeah, if the margin is entirely on the pill, the system demands more pills.
Therefore, the entire system must fundamentally shift to funding care.
Right.
We have to pay pharmacists for the drug-related problems they prevent.
Prevent, right.
If an AI flags a dangerous interaction and the pharmacist spends 20 minutes consulting with the doctor and the patient to stop a prescription, they need to be financially compensated for that clinical intervention, not penalized for failing to sell a product.
Which brings us to the core of pharmaceutical care 2.0. Having established what the technology should do and the massive economic traps it could fall into, what does a resilient, future-proof system actually look like?
It basically looks like Hepler and Strand's 1994 site fully realized, but powered by modern tools. The core requirements for the future are non-negotiable. First, we need completely interoperable health records. The systems must talk to each other to end the data vacuum. Second, as we just discussed, we must fund care, not just product.
And third, investing in people before technology, meaning serious digital literacy training. You can't just drop an AI tool onto a pharmacy counter and expect the staff to magically integrate it without protecting their clinical time to actually learn and think.
Exactly. And fourth, designing for resilience. These practice models must function even when the digital systems inevitably crash, get hacked, or just go offline. Because we are entering what Weidman terms the medicine's responsibility era.
Meaning the tools augment us, but they do not replace us.
Because responsibility is a uniquely human trait.
Yeah.
An algorithm cannot be held morally responsible for a patient's suffering. The machine handles the data. The pharmacist handles the care.
So what does this all mean? How do we visualize this collision of past philosophy and future tech? There is an incredibly striking, almost cinematic metaphor used to describe this journey in the presentation. It's the Voyager 1 spacecraft, launched by NASA way back in 1977.
It's such a brilliant way to conceptualize this.
Think about it. Why use a 1977 spacecraft to explain the future of AI in healthcare? Well, Voyager 1 is currently billions of miles away, traveling through the interstellar medium, completely outside our solar system.
Yeah.
It was built with analog technology, yet it continues to send back invaluable data from the absolute unknown.
And it succeeds in the unknown because its fundamental design, its core mission parameters, were incredibly sound. The 1990 philosophy of pharmaceutical care, that moral bond of responsibility, the five C's, that is the sound design.
It's the ultimate navigational beacon. It doesn't matter if you are charting a patient's history on a piece of scratch paper or using a quantum computer to sequence their DNA. If the mission isn't driven by a moral covenant to improve that human being's life, the technology is useless.
To synthesize everything we've explored today, the digital era is handing healthcare tools of unprecedented power. At the same time, shifting environmental climates and aging populations give us an urgent need to make our systems hyper-resilient. Mm. And the continuing crisis of preventable drug-related morbidity, people getting sicker simply because their medications are interacting poorly, gives the pharmacy profession its enduring mandate. But at the end of the day, clinical excellence, in its most essential form, is not digital. It is human.
That is the core takeaway. The next time you walk into a community pharmacy, you aren't just a consumer buying a commodity off a shelf. You are entering into a covenant. And that person standing behind the counter is fighting an analog battle in a highly digital world to protect your health and your quality of life.
This raises an important question about how we, as a society and as patients, value that interaction. Are we willing to demand and support the transition from a system that pays for volume to a system that pays for responsibility?
It leaves us with this final thought to chew on. We started by picturing that fluorescent-lit aisle of physical pills. If pharmaceutical care 2.0 truly succeeds, if we fix the interoperability, and pharmacists are finally paid entirely for their clinical guidance, their disease prevention, and their moral responsibility rather than just dispensing drugs, will the pharmacy of the future even need to have massive shelves of physical medicine? Or will it look more like a tech-enabled consultation sanctuary, where the human connection is the real cure and the pills are just delivered to your door by a drone? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive.